deep in the heart of the Welsh valleys, a young man had a deceptively young and unfathomably handsome man had decided that it was his destiny to become the greatest dog agility handler the world had ever seen. So he set about learning his craft. His front crosses were crisper than a dry December morning in the Brecon Mountains. His catchkers were slicker than a boiled pigeon in a rubber tube sock. The intensity, accuracy and speed and natural flamboyance he brought far surpassed anything the sport had ever seen and would ever likely see again. The time was approaching where he would be ready to shine on the world stage and begin his legacy. But he realized, to win any battle, you must first know your enemy.
Welcome along, everyone, for another episode of Know Your Enemy. And this time, it's a little bit different again. It's the Christmas special, and I am in the hot seat. This week, my wife Amy is asking me the questions. So for those of you who've been asking, this will be your chance to get to know me a bit better. A word of warning, me and Amy got chatting and we didn't realise how much time had passed, so this episode went a little bit longer than normal. You might need to split it in two. Either way though, as always, I hope you enjoy the episode.
Okay, welcome along everyone. It's another episode of Know Your Enemy, a little bit different this time. Feels a little bit strange, I won't lie. I'm on the receiving end of the questions today. We've had a couple of people ask if maybe I could be asked the questions. So, for a Christmas special, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
We thought that we'd do that. And this is Amy. Amy's my wife. And I'm going to pass the reins over to her today. So, off you go then.
For those people who don't know you, who are you today?
It's a great question. Don't know where you got it from. Inspired. Well, most people know me as Kurt, even though my name is Chris Curtin. I think you
even
only
myself.
Yeah, you only call me Kurt, really. I always say, I think the only people who actually call me Chris are people who either don't know me, they know of me through Facebook or whatever, or my mum.
Yeah.
All my friends, pretty much. Like I said, I can't think of anyone who doesn't. Maybe my sister?
Yeah, maybe. But even I don't call you Chris. It's weird. Kurt is Kurt. You are Kurt.
Yeah. So I would say for most people who I am today, I'm Kurt. I run Karma Fitness, which is kind of a website that helps people with their health and fitness, specifically in dog agility. But I mean, equally, it covers things that are general. I'm a dog agility competitor. And I train a few people too, and father to Osha. So I'd say that's who I am.
Cool. Okay. So when you, all those years back, when you decided to set up Karma Fitness, when you were still working in Ford's, did you originally plan for it to be for you to have a niche in agility? Or was it going to be like a PT service for anyone and everyone?
You're on about Karma Fitness now.
Karma Fitness.
Well, So I think it's probably worth going back a little bit further to explain, because I think it would make more sense what I'm about to say if I do that. So it feels like a long time ago now. When I first finished school, I was a PT, and I was a PT because I came from my competitive background is triathlon and Ironman, surf, life-saving Ironman, not like triathlon Ironman, but like endurance-based sports. And at the time, I was really light, like I didn't weigh much at all, so I was really skinny. So you kind of, they say that you find your niche, don't you? And coming from that background, I had a lot of people just ask me for help and advice on losing weight, essentially. So I got into doing PT through that.
And this was way back when you finished school.
Yeah, this was like when I was, so I finished racing triathlon probably when I was, I don't actually know, but like maybe 20. And yeah, I kind of fell into doing PT because I'd always had a, like you could ask me for as long as I remember, I've always been doing some kind of fitness. And I've, you know, managed to compete at a good level in it. So I've always been quite interested in how you get good, essentially, for sports. Fell into the fitness side of coaching, and like fell into the weight loss side, and I got a bit disheartened with it. I won't go into the details of why, but it was a bit frustrating. So I came away from it and went into engineering. But then I had no plans on starting agility. I've said it a few times on the website. You basically tricked me into that, didn't you?
Yeah.
So I got tricked into joining agility.
We'll talk about that in a bit. Keep going about your Karma Fitness, how that came about.
Well, so it kind of came about, again, not by accident, because it was something that I always was passionate about. And like, I always coached a few people, but it wasn't my main job. Essentially, I was an engineer for a while, but then when I came into agility, I just had a lot of people ask me for advice, didn't I? Yeah. I think people could see that I could move quite well, and like, where I guess a lot of people come into agility and their background is like the dog training.
You could run fast with your long legs as well.
So with my long legs, yeah. I came into agility and my background wasn't dog training. My background was sports and fitness. So compared to a lot of people who maybe it wasn't so natural for, I guess it kind of stood out a little bit.
Yeah.
And yeah, basically straight away I had lots of people asking for advice. And at the start I wasn't charging, I was kind of just helping people because like I said, I've always really enjoyed health and fitness and I enjoyed the geeky science side of it. So it was quite, I just enjoyed coaching people. But then you said, look, if you're going to be spending so much time on it, you may as well kind of start doing something again. And then from there, I was really fortunate enough actually to work with Anne and Stuart Harms at Camdur.
Yeah, of course. That's how it started.
That was how it first started. They let me run a fitness course on their website. So shout out to Anne and Stuart.
Because there was about 20 of us in a little Facebook group to start with, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was like about 20 people. Yeah, about 20 people who asked for help. And I basically started a Facebook group and just was programming sessions on there.
We would just have little write-ups every morning. Yeah. I remember like you weren't kind of doing videos like you do now. I remember the little write-ups you'd send me because I always remember me and Lou were in there. I can't remember who the others were to start with, and we'd have our little write-ups in the morning that we'd do.
Yeah, it was essentially I was programming for about 20 odd people, and then Stuart and Anne were kind enough to ask me to do my program on their website again. Mm. Give them a shout out, yeah. Camdur K9. You know, they've always been great to me, so I always will appreciate the start that they give me. Started it on there and it just went from there really. So again, it wasn't planned, but it was always something that I was passionate about, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Karma Fitness Academy is a massive hub for people who all want to do the same sort of thing and work together, and is a great hub for everyone. I know I'm his wife, but obviously I'm part of it, and we've met a lot of people through it and we all support each other, which is really good fun. So you mentioned the fact that you used to do quite a lot of sports when you were younger and you competed in triathlon. What sports did you do as you were growing up, and which ones do you think benefited you in your agility career, and did you compete in any of those sports?
I've tried them all. I think my dad would always say that like he just wanted me to try them all to find out what I wanted to be doing rather than just be sat in the house. And yeah, I was, again, you, as a parent, I can definitely kind of look back now and be grateful, because like at the time I took it for granted really, because you don't know any different, do you?
No, exactly.
But like as a parent now, I can totally see how much sacrifice essentially my parents made for me, because like I was out doing stuff every night. I've played football, rugby, swimming, cycling, running, basketball, life-saving. I mean, I've tennis, badminton, golf.
Did you compete in any of those professionally or like at a high level?
Yeah. Yeah, I've competed for my country in 5 sports.
And which of those sports did any of them help you in agility, do you think?
I think they all helped me a bit. And again, it's something that I have referred back to on the podcast a few times. It's because I was coached a lot. I am, I think, quite easy to be coached. I've got quite good, like if someone explains something verbally, I can do that.
Yeah.
Whereas like some people have that problem of like translating words into action. And it's not because I'm naturally good at it. It's just because I've always been in that situation.
You know how to take instruction, yeah, kind like, of thing, and how to learn.
I would say like the highly technical sports, things like swimming, like life saving, because you're on craft and technique matters. So it's like, it's all well and good in football, you know, you talk about technique and there's definitely does relate to technique, the same with rugby when you're talking about tackling and like getting your head to the side, and there's definitely technique involved, but not as much as swimming. Like swimming is all about how streamlined you can make yourself,
yeah,
and then obviously speed and power and all that, but essentially it's so technically driven.
Yeah,
I had so much coaching on it. I and it's not only just the technical coaching, it's the how hard it is.
Yeah,
like swimming is brutal when you do it as like a good level. Like I always laugh because like in the academy people are like, oh, my legs are sore today, I don't want to do legs, and like I get it, right? I get it
like my legs today.
Yeah, like your legs today. Yeah, but like I remember one day we went in our swimming club, we used to swim 5 times a week, and I remember going to our swimming coach, and I went in one day, and I was like, oh, Billy, his name was. I was like, oh, Bill, like, my shoulders are killing. I don't feel like I can do front crawl today. He just, like, looked at me and laughed. Like, get in the pool and swim again. And it was just like...
Didn't have a choice.
Yeah, and like, you just got on with it, because that was normal. Like, all the best swimmers are swimming every day, so if you want to be the best, you just got to do it.
Yeah.
And, like, physically... Swimming is so, so tough when you are able to swim fast, because there's no impact. You don't get that soreness as such, so it's just effort. Like, I'd say, like, there were certain types of programming that were just so, so tough. Like, I can always remember it now, like lactic tolerance sessions and like threshold sessions. And like, I used to swim at like 5 in the morning.
And you were so young then as well, weren't you?
Yeah, but you know no different.
Yeah.
You know no different. I used to get on like a push scooter. It's like, oh, back in my day. It's one of them stories.
All them years,
yeah,
ago.
Yeah. No, I used to get on a push scooter at 5 o'clock in the morning and scoot over to my friend's house, who's like 2 miles away, at like 5 in the morning in the middle of, it is like one of them stories, isn't it? 5 in the morning in the middle of winter, and he'd give me a lift down to swim in. And it's like, it was that camaraderie as well, with like everyone's going through these tough sessions together.
Yeah.
So it was like, as soon as someone starts complaining, they just get hammered.
Mm.
They just get absolutely hammered. It's like, what are you complaining for? We're all doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's what I find super, super beneficial from fitness in general. It's that ability to, you know, for want of a better word, understand how much more capable you are, and the ability to suffer and know you're coming out the other side.
Yeah.
Like, that is so important, I think. Like, that mental resilience of just understanding you can do it. Your mind is telling you can't, but you can.
And that'll help you in all walks of life.
All walks of life, yeah. And that's what I'm saying about agility. When, like, because I've had some frustrating times in agility, as everyone has, right? I'm not trying to make out like I'm special. I'm certainly not. But we all have our challenges, don't we?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, the one that everyone can relate to, probably. I mean, I would say probably, because running contacts.
Yeah.
And there's so many times where I'm like, oh my God, this is so hard.
We're years down the line.
Yeah, and you're still working on it.
Yeah.
But it's like that kind of thing. It just, honestly, I just take myself back and I just think, just stop fucking whining. It's not going to help. You've got two options. You either keep going or you fucking quit.
Yeah.
And I ain't quitting. Yeah. So just stop whining and get on with it.
Yeah, because you're not going to get anywhere by quitting at the end of the day. And all of that work you've put in up to that point, you're going to lose, aren't you?
That was always what they said. They always used to say, like, because in the thing, your attitude affects the people around you, doesn't it?
Mm.
So if you're in a swimming group where everyone has got to do something that's really hard, and then there's one person whinging and whining about how hard it is, that ship don't fly.
Yeah.
You ain't getting away with it, like.
Yeah.
And it's like, you learn that. You learn that, look, you have got two options. You don't have to do it. You can quit if you want.
Mm.
But if you're not going to quit and you're going to keep going, shut the fuck up and get on with it.
Yeah.
Because you're not helping anyone. Even yourself. You're just getting in your own way. And it's that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, that's invaluable.
Sometimes my students know from me, I'll sometimes say stuff like that to them. And they know, I know they can take it off me, because they know I'm meaning it in a nice and kind way. But I'm like, just do it.
Yeah.
You can do it. Yeah. Stop fucking around. Just do it. You've trained your dog. I know you can do it. And sometimes they need that, like, push.
Yeah, it's tough love, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, no, yeah, all the boys, like, anyone who's played a team sport will be able to relate to this. Like,
yeah, I know some people don't like it, but
yeah, and it's not for everyone, and that's absolutely fine, but I think it's beneficial.
Yeah,
that, like, it's that attitude of, like, you have got an option.
Yeah,
and you can walk away, and that's fine if that's where you wanted to, but if you're going to stick around, change your attitude, because it's not helping anyone.
Yeah, exactly. So, how long have you actually been doing agility? Obviously, I know, like you said earlier, you were not forced into the situation, tricked. That could be a good word to say.
Yeah,
obviously, we got our two collies together, and we didn't get
them. Well, we didn't get it together, though, did we? We got them for you to compete. They were my dogs, but I weren't to compete in agility with.
Yeah, but we weren't actually getting them for agility. We didn't have a plan to do agility when we got them. We just wanted collies.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, I didn't know what you meant.
Those breeds, because I remember you saying that you wanted a husky, and me saying, I ain't getting a husky, so I groom those dogs, and I do not like them. No offence to anyone that's got a husky. And I was like, but what about a blue male border collie? Because they have, like, blue eyes, and they can look a little bit like a husky.
That's how shallow we were.
Didn't have a clue. And I hadn't done my degree at that point. And yes, we'd been dog owners, but we were pet dog owners who weren't that experienced, even though I'd had dogs from 18 months, and you'd had Porsche, your Dalmatian. Obviously when we got them, we didn't know what we were going to do with them. They were going to be our pets, but we didn't plan on having a sport. We just got told when we took them to puppy class, you've got collies, you've got to give them a job.
Well, you and got it, told
I got told
because I,
yeah.
I like I said they were yeah. they were definitely pets to me, and I loved them. It wasn't that I wasn't
yeah
I think I used to do a little bit of running with them, but like I wasn't interested in doing sports.
No. So how did you end up getting sucked into the good old agility world?
Well, I don't want to go too much into it because I have talked about it, and I don't want to repeat it too much. But because, like, we found out that you were pregnant with Osh, and, like, you carried on running them, basically, until you were, like, 8 months
pregnant. I was, like, 8.5 months pregnant. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And I just remember so every time Amy used to go off to an agility show, I didn't. I'd go off and do my own thing as well. And that was kind of like, we were just doing our own things, and it was all good. But it came to the point where Amy was not able to run them anymore, really, wasn't it? It was a bit dangerous. She didn't want to risk falling and that. So Amy just asked if I would do it for their fitness,
wouldn't keep it? Them fit, basically. Yeah. Keep them going, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
just
so
basic stuff.
So I did, because like I said, it wasn't that I didn't like doing stuff with my dogs. I loved them, as any pet owner does as well. It's no different. But I just didn't think that Amy's thing was dog sports. I did other stuff, and just never thought that I would do the dog sports. But when Amy asked, yeah, no problem, I'll keep them fit for you. And like, I'm not gonna lie, I've said it before, it looked easy, because it just looked like you were pointing and running. And,
I mean, I don't think I made it look easy, but other people sure did.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I've looked at it athletically. I think I looked at it like physically, what the human was doing, and I thought, well, I can do that, so it must be easy. And then there's a video floating around of my first ever go in there. Straight arm mafia, yeah. For some reason I'm using the wrong arm all the time.
Those poor dogs.
Yeah, I know.
Thank God they were well trained.
Well. But yeah, it was harder than it looked, obviously. And I think partly why I carried on was that reason. But yeah, it was good fun. And for myself, I've always wanted to be doing something active, and I love competition.
Yeah.
Now, the reality of it is, with the sports that I was playing, I was coming to the end of the time where I could be truly competitive, because they weren't sports that really allowed it.
Yeah.
Like with my squash, there's another sport. I was playing a lot of squash, and my knees were getting really sore all the time. With rugby, I was just getting really bad bumps, and like recovery was taking longer. Same with football.
Yeah.
So without really knowing about it, I was kind of not looking for another sport, but I knew that I would need to find another sport that I could do to be competitive, because, you know, I'm not going to lie, I love the competition. I really enjoy the dog training as well, but I love the competition.
Yeah.
So when I kind of did it, realised how bad I was, but then also realised, you know, I should be able to get better.
Yeah.
I should be able to do what, like, the top people were doing at the time, because like, I'd watch them with you because I knew you were interested in it. I knew I didn't know the dog training, but equally I knew I could learn, because you'd just done your degree.
I was just finishing my degree at that point, and to be fair, you were helping me, as in like proofreading.
I was just proofreading. I had no idea about dog training,
but you were kind of learning as you were proofreading my work, I guess.
Well, you do, didn't you? You pick things up. But like, you know, I was under no false pretenses, I wasn't a dog trainer, but I thought I could learn that side of things, and then I thought maybe I could pick up the slack from the handling side of things, I suppose.
What do you think you found the hardest when you first started, the hardest thing about agility?
Well, this might be a little bit, this might, lack of coaching. Lack of coaching in the way that I was used to being coached.
Yeah.
So, what I mean by that is, and again, I have referred to this, kind of referred to it, but like any sport that I did, there was always, when you're new, this is what you do. And session by session, you turn up and someone tells you exactly what to do. There's nothing left to chance. And I get why it's harder with dog agility, because a lot of the training has to be done at home, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think it is a lot different now, because like there's a lot of courses online and all that kind of stuff.
And a lot of people do things different ways as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, there is no one way to do things. There's lots of different ways, but it's about working out what's best for you.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was best for me.
Yeah.
So I think I could have expedited my progress if I'd have known more, but I'm sure that's the case for everyone.
So if you knew what you know now, then how would you change, like back then, what you, all the things you know now, what do you think you would change?
But you don't know until like you make the mistake, really, don't you?
Yeah.
And I think the mistake that I see a lot of people making is they, and I get why they're doing it as well, it's only through wanting to improve, but like they'll go to lots of different people.
Especially when you first learn.
Yeah, because
it,
like
yeah.
you're super keen, and I was super keen, I wanted to learn, I wanted to get as good as I could, because I was competitive, so I went to lots of different people. But like I look back at that now and I understand why that isn't beneficial.
It can be quite confusing, isn't it? Especially like we say about the fact that people have got different views, and also there was different handling techniques.
There's different ways,
well.
Isn't it? There's different ways of doing things, and it's like
I did the same mistake. Yeah.
Yeah, I think lots of people do, don't they?
Yeah, definitely.
And it's not a negative, because at the end of the day,
you've
got to
learn.
Yeah. I didn't know what I didn't know, and I didn't know that that was going to be a problem until I found out. So some people will be lucky and they might only have access to one coach, and that one coach might be brilliant. So they might get perfect training from the start. But again, if I could go back, I would say find someone who handles and trains like you want to train and just stick with them.
Yeah, definitely. Because I know we eventually worked out who the best people were for us. Because like I said, I made the same mistake, and there was a few trainers that I went to that I didn't feel like benefited me. And I try and tell my new students now who are like complete novices and that, and when they start looking at training days, I'm like, look, try them, but try not to book everyone. And it's not because I want them to just stay with me. I'm not being like selfish or anything like that. I just don't want them to get confused, because I know it can be mind-blowing and it can almost be overwhelming as well, can't it?
Yeah, I have to say as well, like I at the time when I was starting, obviously I was like super keen, but like I was, you know, I knew nothing.
Yeah.
I knew absolutely nothing. And I was really lucky to have some people who were willing, who are like big trainers at the name, and they were willing to go the extra mile to help me. And I look back now and I think, well, they didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Like I was no one. I was just another person. But because I was so keen, I was like reaching out to help. And like people like Barry James, he helped me loads at the start, and he definitely didn't have to. Bonnie Quick.
Yeah.
Bonnie was brilliant. And both of them still are, still brilliant now. But like, I look back at those times when I was first starting, and I was like just some random coming from the street and messaging these people who were like top of their game. And they must have been thinking, who is this idiot you're messaging me? But yeah, I mean, they were super helpful to me. Obviously, I've had loads of people who've been helpful since. Like, loads. I've been really, really fortunate. But those two really stand out at the very, very start, when I feel like they probably didn't have to help so much.
I mean, it obviously helped that I gave you two impeccably trained dogs to start with.
Two? What's the second one?
But don't forget, like, you did learn with Luna as well when I was pregnant. But, I mean, Figaro, what a talented dog. I mean, his
weeds
and his contacts were phenomenal.
He taught me patience.
You a lot of patience.
Yeah, the dog had the will of a champion, but the talent of not a champion, should we say?
So we
to put it politely,
He could, if we had him again, all over again, he would be awesome, bless him. I mean, he put 110% in every single time, didn't he, that boy?
Yeah, for sure. I was lucky with regards to how much he wanted to do it, because like I guess when I was learning, I'm sure I did loads of stuff wrong, But that never deterred him.
Failure never, ever worried him, did it? He could cope with failing and failing and failing, not always because of him, but like...
I would do stuff wrong or whatever the case may be. But like, yeah, I never had to worry about him, his spirits being dampened.
Do you think it helped you at all having a dog that already kind of knew what it was doing when we started?
Probably, yes. But equally, I know, like, we joke about it, but... Fuck me, he was frustrating, man.
Yeah, and I know, obviously, being my first agility dog, Figaro, I didn't know what I was doing when I was training. Yeah. Things were different back then. Like, we didn't have foundations back then.
I take the piss about it all the time, but, like, you know, I don't mean it really.
Oh, no, I know.
But my point being, it was beneficial because I could do agility straight away.
Yeah.
Right? So that was definitely beneficial. And, like, his contacts were really good. He had a good dog walk, good A-frame, good weaves, good seesaw. But his jumping was fucking terrible, man.
Yeah.
When I had to, like, even when I physically block him from taking the face of a jump, he'd still take me out and take the face of a jump.
Well, yeah, we remember that in WO. It was your first ever WO.
He crashed into me, didn't he?
First ever run in WO was when Figaro takes you out on your biathlon jumping run. I think it was, wasn't that?
Yeah, like I said, it's not his fault. He didn't know any better, but, like, you know, we know now that, like, when the dog is learning, it's probably not good to cheer him when he takes poles.
No.
Like, takes a pole, yeah, good boy! Probably not. Probably not a good thing.
Exactly.
So, like, yeah, I mean, definitely benefits, because I could do agility straight away. So for someone who's competitive, that's quite important, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Because, like, I was never at a point where I couldn't be competitive.
Yeah.
Because, like, a 2-year lead-in is what it takes. And obviously I've done it since, and it's fine because I know what's coming at the end, and I do enjoy the training.
And I wonder whether you would have done it then.
I don't know if I would have done that, because I don't know that I would have known how much I enjoyed the competition. And for someone to say, oh, look, you've got to, number one, commit to buying a dog.
Yeah.
And then commit to doing the best part of 18 months to 2 years training. And like might take longer.
Then, you weren't a dog trainer.
Exactly,
you didn't have
any
dog training knowledge.
So yeah, I think the benefit was the fact that I could go straight into competition, and it let me find out if I did...
Yeah.
Like it or not.
I know there were times where Figaro made you want to quit, and there were so many times where I was like, please don't quit, because life was so much easier with you doing it alongside me with Oshin as a baby.
Yeah, I think the reason I carried on is because I'm stubborn.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was just thinking. So the issue we had with Figaro was his poles. That was the main issue. But like, I couldn't go clear because he would just take so many poles. Like, I'm not talking one pole every now and again, I'm talking like more poles than not poles.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it? And so the way that I trained it is and this is after 2 years of competing mine, so the behavior was quite ingrained, but I had to shape him to not take poles. And for a dog that is stubborn and finds...
He was just as stubborn as you, wasn't he?
Yeah, and like finds the enjoyment and the reward is the agility itself.
Yeah.
I used to set up a jump outside in our garden that was about 4 meters by 4 meters, maybe something like that, enough room for one jump. And every single day in the off season, I'd warm him up, spend like, you know, 5-6 minutes giving him a warm up, and then I'd do a jump skill with him, and if he touched the pole, I'd take him in. And the amount of times I would spend the 5 or 6 minutes to warm him up, and then the very first jump, which I'm just doing straight on, I'm not even doing as a skill, he'd crash the pole. And I'm like, fuck's sake, man. You've got to give me a break. Like,
I remember the straight door slamming.
Slam the door. Figaro's like landed. He's like had 5 or 6 minutes. Fun time. Yeah. So yeah, definitely learned a lot of patience and learned that it doesn't matter if you want to do something, you've got to do it right for the dog.
Yeah.
So yeah, definite benefits, but definite drawbacks as well.
I do remember like the odd time when I would run him then, like later on, once you've done all that training, he was definitely a different dog to how I ran him. But
yeah, but like he allowed me to learn with him. Like I said, I made mistakes, but like because he was so, just
he
had
was
a lot
so
of
resilient when he was such a good boy and just wanted to work.
Yeah,
no matter
and
what,
like with,
so.
With, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So thinking about like those mistakes that you made, maybe you go into too many trainers when you first started, what mistakes do you see agility handlers, new and old, making, and what you wish they would stop making those mistakes?
I don't want to say new or old. I would just say something that I feel not enough people have a really strong grasp of, and it's probably made the biggest difference with my training. And again, I got told it, so you know, if you're not aware of it, it's hard. Reward structure.
Yeah.
I go on about it all the time. I only teach two groups now, and I'm sure you're fed up of me talking about it, but I just think it's a massive... How a dog understands something and how a dog learns is massively based off that reward structure, and more than that is the consistency in how people use it.
Yeah.
So like, the more that you can be consistent with how your reward structure is for it, the easier it is for a dog to learn what it is you want from them.
Yeah, definitely.
And the one thing that I don't... The one thing that I see all the time is when people... And I've done it, so it's not like I'm like, oh, I don't understand why. I get why. When people are trying to train something, and if something doesn't go right, and then they are like, oh, never mind, well done, and they give the toy, and I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, but they tried, didn't they? I'm like, yeah, that's great. I was like, but you've just rewarded them for not doing it. And they're like, oh, no, I didn't. I was like, the toy's in the dog's mouth.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally rewarding them for not doing it. I'm not saying be nasty to them, but like, it's about the dog understanding that, like, if like, how is that dog going to understand what is right if even when they get it wrong they're getting rewarded?
Yeah.
And it's like, I get why people do it. They want to be nice to their dogs, and don't get me wrong, if you're running a course and it's the handler's fault, then reward the dog. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about specifically if you're trying to teach a dog a skill. If you're trying to teach a dog a skill and the dog doesn't do it right, then the level of reward has to like show them that that wasn't right. So whether that is just a case of withholding the reward or whether it's a low value reward, but they can't always have the same reward, because otherwise it's going to be really hard for them to learn. And what I see a lot of people doing is exactly that. I was guilty. It's the number one reason why Cobb's dog walk isn't as good as I would like it to be. But I've learned, and if I could say to everyone to fix one thing that I think would make the biggest difference in all of their training, I would say is, if you don't understand what reward structure is, learn.
Yeah.
And if you haven't got a rock solid reward structure in place for each of your dogs, do that.
So going back to the fact that you've obviously competed in sports at high levels for a long time, and from when you were young, that's obviously got to have benefited you from competing in a dog agility. Do you ever struggle with nerves or anything, or did you back then, and was there a way that you managed to cope with your nerves?
I was lucky I had help.
Yeah.
I love competition firstly, and I think that helps. I think some people don't enjoy the competition because they're scared of failure.
Mm.
I was never scared of failure. I always saw it as an opportunity to win rather than a possibility of losing.
Yeah.
So like, some people go into things and they worry about what they're going to look like to other people.
Yeah.
I never gave a toss.
Yeah.
I couldn't care less about what other people thought of me. I never have. It's one thing my mum always used to laugh at. I used to buy the clothes I wanted, whether they were cool or not.
And they still laugh at you now. But
yeah, exactly. And I don't know why that was the case. Honestly, I've got no idea. But I've never cared what people thought.
Yeah.
As long as I'm being true to myself and I'm not acting a way that is not who I am, then I always just think, well, if someone doesn't like me, that's fine.
Mm.
But I'm not going to fake it to make someone like me.
Yeah.
And I think that plays into the not getting nervous part, because I think the reason why a lot of people get nervous is that they're worried about not doing well. And then I guess the only reason about worrying about not doing well is because of what other people think.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
So I didn't. It was always for me an opportunity to win. It was never I might lose.
Mm.
If I lost, which I did plenty.
Yeah.
That's fine. But I always thought of that as part of the process. It was always like, well, if I lose, that's fine. You can only ever be one winner. I will win eventually.
So when you step up to the line on that champ final, or when you stepped on the line in Crufts for the first time, you weren't nervous?
No.
How did you feel?
Excited,
yeah.
But that, like, I have had help as well, and I don't want to make it out like I was complete. Because, like, before, I wasn't nervous, but I didn't understand why. I didn't understand any of it, obviously.
Why you weren't nervous?
Yeah,
and I guess just because wasn't. Everyone else was.
Yeah.
You're thinking, well, why aren't I?
Yeah, why aren't I nervous? What, you know. But, like, I understand now, it's down to how you frame it.
Mm.
And, like, fear and anxiety to someone, that's excitement to me.
Yeah.
So you get those like butterfly feelings in your stomach, and it's that anxiety and some for someone. But for me, I'm like, oh, I can't fucking wait.
You can turn it into a positive, those butterflies.
Well, it is. It's like you're
taking over.
Like, not everyone is in a position where they get an opportunity to compete.
Yeah.
And there's a famous, I don't know who said it, there's a famous saying, is like, and it's something like, you should be grateful for the chance to compete.
Mm.
Like, not everyone gets that chance. And like, I always thought of that myself. I was like, I work however many hours. Like, I used to do triathlon. It's like 6 hours training a day.
Yeah.
So the competition was the fun bit.
Yeah.
So if I was going into competition,
what
and always,
are you working for?
Yeah. If I was going into competition and always dreading it, I just think, why would I be training that many hours? Where's the benefit? Where's the positive? Like, I used to love the competition.
Yeah, and all the hours we put into our dogs, especially on their bloody dog walks.
Well,
and
everything, innit?
Everything, yeah. Like,
you know, everything goes towards
it.
The daily walks.
We do it for don't we?
Yeah, the daily walks, all the training, all the foundations.
Yeah.
All of the thoughts we put into, like, their fitness, all their hydration and nutrition. Same for the handlers. It's like, you put all the work in, you go to a competition, you should be excited.
Yeah.
And that's not me saying seconds. You should be excited. What I'm saying is, if you feel nervous, ask yourself why.
Yeah.
What are you afraid of? What's the worst that can happen?
Mm.
The worst that can happen is, like, I know there's going to be some people going, oh, I could fall on my ass and roll on. Yeah, okay. If that's the worst thing that can happen, who cares?
Yeah.
How many people have you seen fall over? And then, yeah, you might think, oh, that was unlucky, they fell over. Do you think worse of that person?
No. And I mean, I'm not being funny. Martin Reed, one of the top handlers, falling over in
Martin.
The biggest competition in his career.
Still getting burned now, Martin.
Still getting burned, bless him. But
nah, like, it's part
he's
of competition.
On,
but no, like,
yeah.
The reality is, Martin's a brilliant handler.
Exactly.
He, like, everyone's like, oh yeah, he was like close to winning the gold. How many people can be in that situation?
Yeah.
Like, the man did so good to get a 2-year-old dog to be at that point, and it's
yeah.
like.
And he's
stop
fallen over a lot in his
yeah.
career.
So, because he goes for it.
Exactly.
He's not worried about what people think. He fucking goes for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I always say to someone. If you're falling over, you are committed.
Yeah.
I think people worry because they worry. I think people get nervous because they're worried about failure. And the only reason I can see why they'd be worried about failure is because they're worried what people think.
Yeah.
I don't see any other reason. What's the negative in not winning?
Yeah. Just, I mean, it's not like we win money at the end of the day,
yeah,
is it?
You don't win money. You don't lose anything. You don't have to pay any extra.
Yeah.
You don't have to do any extra work. No one gets whipped. You know, it's literally, you've lost. Okay. That's it.
Yeah.
There's nothing to worry about. And that's what I always think. It's like, if you get nervous, sit down, ask yourself why.
Yeah.
What am I afraid of?
Yeah.
Because all it is like people watching. And like, you know yourself, if you see someone who does something stupid, you don't think any worse of them. You just think, oh, look at that. Nightmare.
And they'll probably be forgotten about
and you've
the
forgotten
next
about
day,
10
right?
minutes later.
Yeah.
10 minutes later, you're worried about your own dog.
Yeah, exactly.
You're worried about your own dog missing weaves. So yeah, don't
yeah.
stress about it.
Yeah, definitely. So thinking of competition, what do you see as success? And what would you say that is your biggest success so far in your agility career?
In my agility career, success for me is being able to get out there and compete at the best level I can.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, the ultimate success would be winning. And I'm not going to lie and say I don't want to win.
Mm.
Of course, I'd love to win. But, you know, last year I didn't. But I don't think it was an unsuccessful year.
Yeah.
I think, so what I've learned with in dog agility specifically is with Figaro, and again, not knocking Figaro, but for me to have a chance to win with Figaro, other dogs have to go wrong.
Mm.
Right? That's just the reality of the situation. And people are like, oh, no, he's really... No. The reality of the situation is at the top level with Figaro, for me to have a chance to win, I have to rely on other people going wrong.
Yeah.
Too many other people going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So success for me with Cop, like, I know you know what it used to be like.
Mm.
But the fact that I am able to be in any competition in the UK. You know, I can't talk internationally because I've only done limited stuff with COP. Obviously, we were unfortunate not to get out there this year. Hopefully next year. But the fact that I can go into any competition and I'm not reliant on other people going wrong.
Yeah.
I have got a chance to win.
Yeah.
that's success for me with COP. Because of the dog he is, where he's come from, what we've had to go through together. You know, as a dog, you know, he's a great dog.
Yeah.
He's so nice.
He's the best boy.
He's got a lovely temperament. Yeah. He's unbelievably talented.
Yeah.
He's just a perfectionist. So it's been about working out what works for him. And we've done that. I would say now he is running happy.
Yeah. Well, the fact that he woofs at you. Yeah. And, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's... He's almost really confident. Do you know what he's come from? That's come a long way to what he's come from. And, it, you know... And so that's success for me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For me, you know, he's won a ticket. He qualified for the GB team. He qualified for Crufts.
And he's only 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that for me is success. Being able to be in a competition and... know that we've got as much chance as anyone.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I would say that's success for us, yeah.
And going to the other side, what would you see as your biggest failure so far?
In agility?
Yeah, or I mean, you can say real life if you like, but maybe if you think there's anything in agility.
So with agility, I would say my biggest failure probably with COP was taking a while to realise what was needed for him. And it was a case of just, it wasn't a bad thing, it wasn't like a, but like, he's not the same as our other dogs, is he? He
no.
needed a different kind of training. So I just wish I'd have realized that earlier. I think things could have got easier if we'd have known that, but it comes from experience, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think if you think about it, he was your first dog
I trained Foundations. Yeah. So yeah, I would say with COP it was just a case of it comes with experience, but I wish that I'd have been able to see what worked for him earlier.
Yeah, definitely. And the good thing is you've learnt so much with him, and now you've obviously had Funky, who was a completely different dog after him, who was a lot stronger and a lot different, and then Hippy, the little border pup, who's got those slight sensitivities, not as much as COP, but you've gone through that with COP. And yeah. you'll find it much easier with Hippy when you see those sensitive sides.
Well, I spotted it straight away.
Yeah.
And I knew straight away. So it was always, like, you learn from every dog, don't you? Every dog you've got, you learn, you get a bit better from and all that kind of stuff.
Definitely. So thinking of the successes that you've had so far in agility, obviously, like the fact you qualified for Crufts, you won a ticket. Do you think that was down to yourself, the dog, the training? What do you think?
A bit of everything. Like, COP's really talented. Yeah. Like, he's, you know, he's really a good dog. Like,
it's like you said, you don't need other people to go wrong for him to do well.
But more than that, it's like all of the attributes that anyone would look for in an agility dog, he's pretty much got.
Yeah.
Like, physically, he's really powerful. He's got a brilliant calmness.
Yeah.
In the sense that he stays calm so he can work. So like a lot of people say to me, oh, like, you're lucky he's really consistent. And it's like, it's not luck. He's really consistent because of the dog he is.
Yeah.
So he could, like, where lots of dogs, like, they go into that high arousal state and then maybe if the course is right for them, they'll do really well. COP will do really well on every course because he can stay calm.
Yeah.
So it's everything. It is everything. Like, the COP is well trained. He's physically talented, he's got a brilliant brain, very clever, he can stay calm even in those like high intensity situations.
Yeah.
And temperament wise as well, he's lush.
Yeah, he's got the most beautiful temperament, to be fair to him, especially for a boy dog. Even when he wasn't castrated, he was such a...
Yeah, he's just a nice dog. But like, I think like for us, the success is partly down to the fact I can run as well, because I just always think when people say, oh no, it's not about running fast. I'm not saying you're going to get world champion from being fast at running. I'm just saying it'll help.
Yeah.
And that's all. Yeah. It's like, apart from like everyday life, that's why you should do fitness.
Yeah, definitely.
But like, if you do dog agility, being faster is not going to ever be the problem. You're never going to be like, oh, I didn't get through there because I was too class as a handler. I was like too amazing. I'm not going to say that, are you?
No, definitely not. So obviously agility as a sport is changing rapidly. What would you see as the future of the sport and the impact it can have on dog and handlers alike?
Well, I said over COVID, again, this is stuff I have spoken about, so I'm not going to go too deep, but over COVID, I thought I just thought that some of the courses I was seeing were mental. Like, the amount of challenges and, like, the amount of, like, dog training skill and just the amount of stuff. I always remember looking at courses and thinking, oh, that's a tough skill, and there's, like, 50 obstacles in the way. And it's like, it was getting to a point that I thought it was people just trying to come up with the wildest shit. And it was like, I love hard courses. I love the challenge. I don't go into a course and think I won't enjoy it if I don't go clear. But I thought some of them were verging on being unachievable. And it was like, it definitely has pulled back since that. But I thought it was going away where I thought this is just going to be mental. Like, you're going to have to do so much training because
it was... How are you even going to succeed at it?
Yeah. But it definitely came back a little bit from that. So I think COVID had a big part to play because people were putting up courses that people weren't competing on. So, like, people were thinking, oh, this is kind of where the standard is now. No one competing on it, so no one knew how many would go clear. And then the next gen would come out, and then there's a harder version of that course, and then harder... And it was just like, oh, my God, man. It's like layering, discrimination, speed. It was mad. Yeah. Absolutely mad. But it definitely came back. Pulled it back a bit.
Yeah.
Someone pulled the reins in, and I think, yeah, when people got competing again, starting to see some nice balances now between challenges and... stuff that is like still achievable. I think
as well, like, obviously people, the British people, see the trends that they get over in Europe, and there's a lot, obviously most of our trends come from over there, and we've seen all that layering and discrimination, but they have such bigger rings than us.
It's different size rings though.
Yeah, and different size,
different
rings,
shapes,
definitely.
Sorry, like the longer rectangular rings,
and then trying to like redo that in the size rings that we have in Kennel Club shows, it probably was what didn't make you work so well, and like, especially with all that stuff everywhere.
Well, I've seen, like,
not every judge did it, but
you know, the in thing to do now is to try to be like international, whatever you call that. And the thing that I see people go wrong with is their interpretation of what that is.
Mm.
And like, you run a course and you think, man, this is awkward, and it's meant to be like a fast flowing course, and it's like, the only way that course is fast and flowing is if a dog is not fast.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they're landing long, and then the next line is not flowing or fast because the dog is having to collect.
Yeah.
So it's either with a dog with a shorter stride or a dog that's not as powerful. So yeah, I think the interpretation of what that is can sometimes be the biggest issue.
Yeah.
It's almost as if you need, what I think would work for large dogs, I don't think it would work for little dogs because it would probably make it harder for smaller dogs. But for a large dog, what I think people need to do is picture the fastest, most powerful, worst turning large dog they know and design for them.
Yeah.
And that way you're going to have fast courses because it'll be safe.
Basically, you could have designed courses for Figaro in that
way. Yeah. Yeah.
Poor old things.
He didn't know what a bend in his spine was.
He was
stiff as a rock.
So... rules. What rules would you change or take out?
There's been some good ones suggested. The one that I thought was good, that I didn't actually realise was an FCI rule, was the same obstacle can't be repeated within 5 obstacles.
Yeah, Dan Shaw said about that one.
I think it was Martin.
Oh, it was Martin, was it? Yeah.
That was a good one. I didn't know that was a rule, but that was good.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think the bitching season rule.
Yeah.
I don't like that one. That can be really frustrating for someone with a bitch.
Yeah.
And like, cop's a boy, so I got like Duck, obviously she's a bitch, but I'm coming at it from both sides.
Yeah,
you know, I just think that that's one thing that can definitely be changed.
And I just think that it's like, it's fine, it's allowed in Europe, so why can't we do it over here, isn't it? You know, I don't see why Kennel Club can't change that. But maybe one day. Favorite judges then, fit like here or abroad?
So here, I like some of Neil's courses. Some of them are mad mind. Natalie's.
Natalie's courses.
Yeah, Nat's are really cool. I've liked some of what Jason has put up recently.
Yes, Jason's evolved a lot, I feel. I feel he's come on really... and
it's all personal taste, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
definitely.
It's like, we can say that they've come on. Like, I just enjoy running them.
Yeah.
I like Dave's courses. Dave's courses are always a challenge. The best champ courses I run this year, again, just a personal thing, was Martin's.
Yeah.
Martin's champ courses were really cool.
They were really cool.
Yeah. I'm going to miss some, and that'll be sad, because there's, we've got some good judges now, and there's a lot of judges that I look out for. Yeah. Ian Patters do some nice course. Becky Hodson did some nice ones. Dan never judges, but when he does judge, they're pretty cool as well. I'm sure I've missed some, but there's some good judges that I like. Internationally, I like Ivan
Alvarez.
Oh,
Alvarez. Yeah. His courses in CSJ last year were really cool, weren't they?
I really liked his. Alejandro's. I liked Jocke Tangefelt's.
I don't know if I've run any of his.
So I run some of his in Iconics, but I follow his, and I really like his. He's probably my favourite.
Yeah.
And then there's all of the popular ones that everyone knows, you know, Tomáš, Jan.
Daniel's courses in Iconics I loved as well. Yeah. They were really cool.
Kina.
Yeah.
I haven't interviewed yet, so I don't know how to say her name properly, but I really like Kina's courses. Steph, yeah. Semcat. Yeah, we're lucky. We've got lots of good judges now, yeah. I think, and a bit spoiled for choice. I'm sure I've missed some.
We are so lucky that those judges come over here now as well, and like we don't have to go abroad to be able to experience those courses, like in shows like Iconics and the EO Simulators, and it's...
Ryan's courses were good this weekend as well.
Yeah, for a first champ show for me, I thought those courses were brilliant. I really, really enjoyed Ryan's courses.
Like on a personal level, I would have liked to have seen them harder, but that's just because I prefer harder courses.
Yeah,
they were good courses, they were nice lines, they were good challenges. Yeah. So yeah, shout out to Ryan for his first champ.
I feel like out of all of our British judges, Dave and Neil seem to be like so much like the European judges.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would say Martin's were. I think
he had to change because the ground wasn't the best.
I really like Martin's courses. Yeah, I think they're my favourite ones of the year, personally. Like I love Neil's courses, I love Dave's, and I really like Nat's. And what I like about Nat is she's definitely got her own style.
Yes.
I appreciate that. She's not trying to copy anyone. Mm. She is doing her own thing, and I like them. They're good courses. Her champ courses were wicked this year as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to champ at Derby with her.
And oh, is she in Derby?
Yeah, she's Derby champ judge.
Nick Jones's course has been good.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, like I say, there's loads, and I know I'm going to miss some, so if I've missed you and you know I like your courses, apologies.
Yes, yeah, cool. It is definitely a lot more enjoyable judges now, or courses that I enjoy to run now, and I feel like we're a little bit spoilt for choice now almost.
We're
lucky in the amount of courses, and obviously the Love the Lions course that Dave and Dan and Becky and that
tell you someone
helps.
Whose courses I really like, but he never judges, is James Adams's. Because like obviously we chat a lot, and he sends me some of his courses, and they're always really cool, but he never judges, so this is a message to him. Stop being a knob.
Yeah. Or judge some that are not always in Dog Sports Derby lower grade, because I think that's what you've done, and we've missed out on them.
Yeah. No, James's courses are cool. He always puts good, because when he does his training days, they're always nice courses.
Yeah, cool. So, obviously, don't include me or Dave, because I realise that we would be your first choices, obviously. Who would be your most influential dog agility handler or trainer?
Ooh, good question. Who'd...
Or, if you can't think of the answer to that, who do you most love watching?
So, who's been most influential on me? It probably is Dave, honestly, because he's helped me a lot. Charlotte Harden.
Yeah. You trained Cop and Duck a lot with her when they were younger, didn't you?
Yeah, Charlotte. Yeah. I still say all the time, Charlotte, you've got to fit me back in.
Yeah.
Charlotte was great. And, like, we learnt... Like, I don't think Charlotte has experienced many dogs like Cop before.
Mm.
And the good stuff as well as the bad stuff, sure, you know. And, you know, we learned together, I think, and I was really lucky because Charlotte is a really good dog trainer.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot from her. So she was definitely influential. Same with Dan and Dave. Like, I'm really lucky. Both of them have helped me a lot. And I know that you're joking, but obviously yourself as well. You know, ultimately we train together more than I train with anyone else.
Yeah.
And Dalton as well.
Yeah, Dalton. Yeah.
I'm lucky. I'm really lucky, and I'm well aware of it. Like, Charlotte doesn't compete currently, but like, she's a brilliant dog trainer, so I learned a lot from her. Like yourself, you've got a degree in canine behaviour, you understand it, and you taught me how to do dog agility in the first place. Dan and Dave, super helpful. Again, never had to. They helped me just because they were kind enough to help me. Dave obviously fancies me. That's why
obviously,
he helped me.
Obviously, yeah, because I'm always batting him away.
Yeah, and like I say, Dolph is really good as well. Helps me a lot. I am fortunate. I've got lots of people who help. So I don't know if I could say I've got one biggest influence, but with regards to who helped me a lot, probably with COP, I would say Charlotte. And overall, I would say Dan, Dave and yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I promise I will still cook you dinner and I won't take offence to anything you say. You can say whatever you like now. Best and worst thing about having a partner in agility. I know you and Dave have obviously done a big podcast on this where me and Dan weren't invited to be able to stick up for ourselves.
Yeah, the best thing is obviously that now on the weekends, whereas it would have been that we were away from, like, you know, you spend separate all the time in the weekend. So that's good. It's good that we're both able to do what we enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And it's together. So that's obviously a good. Another thing is obviously the training. I know a lot of people who partners aren't into agility, so they might have to train on their own.
Yeah.
And that's, I think sometimes it can take you for granted, the stuff that we can do that maybe other people can't.
Yeah.
So that's good as well. But then the bad thing is when you don't listen to me and you're wrong, and I have to not say that you're wrong. And no, obviously it is annoying, and I know you get annoyed as well, so I don't feel bad about it. But like when, for example, you're doing something in training and I tell you to do something and you just kind of like, no, and I'm just thinking, oh my God, just fucking do it. Just do it, it'll help.
And sometimes as well, obviously, we do train certain things in different ways. 100%,
yeah.
And I know this.
I am aware that it's just my opinion, but at the time, I am just thinking, just fucking do it. Because I know it's right and I know it will work. But the other thing that's really bad is watching you compete. I hate it. I get nervous for that.
I'm the same with you.
Yeah.
People know from my heavy breathing on the videos and my constant wittering away in the back of the videos.
Some kind of stalker, like. Like with your heavy breathing.
Can't
help it. Yeah, no, that's really hard. I really don't enjoy that as well, because I think that it's not that it doesn't mean much to me. It definitely does mean, but I know how much it means to you as well.
Mm.
So the fact that I can't help, that's not nice.
And it's really hard, like something I really hate about us doing it together is when I see, like, you fail and, like...
What do you mean? I'm perfect.
Well, you are perfect. Of course you are. You are perfect. But, like, there's times where you're so, so close and then Cop misses a dog walk.
Yeah. And that's competition, isn't it? I mean, don't get me wrong. Definitely. Like, you know, it is hard. It's the same. Like, not hard as in, like, physically hard. It's just... It sucks, doesn't it?
It does suck, and I feel that disappointment as much as you do.
It's the same this year as well. Like, we were both with our young dogs, we were trying to get into the novice cup, and we...
Yeah.
Now, me personally, it's not that it wasn't a goal. It was definitely a goal. I would have liked, and I tried. I'm not trying to make out like I didn't try. But you really wanted it, didn't you? For you, it was a big goal. You really wanted to do it.
It was my only goal this year. Really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so when I managed to qualify, luckily... Because we had a pot. What did we have?
Seesaw.
Well, that's fucking ongoing, isn't it?
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously seesaw. Still seesaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had a fault in the novice thing and I had a 5. So I didn't really think much more of it. I was like, well...
You were one place out, basically.
So, but like, obviously, not trying to make out like I wasn't gutted. But for me, it wasn't a massive goal. I knew it was for you. So I was gutted when you didn't do it. What did you do?
I got E'd because I used a Marucci and forget how perfect that little dog is.
Yeah, you overhandled a bit, basically.
Overhandled her, it was me, not her.
So yeah, that wasn't nice.
Yeah.
Because like I knew that meant more to you than it did for me. And then it was kind of worse when I got a place because Amanda Lutman got a place and she was judging. She had to pull out and I got pulled in. So I was like happy that I got pulled in, but also felt a bit bad because I knew it meant more to you than it did to me.
But do you know what? Even though... Like, yes, it was a massive goal for me and Moose. Like, I was chuffed that I got to the semi-finals anyway, and I did really want it, but I, like, the fact that you got it, I was not, bitterness at all.
No, and I don't want it to sound like that.
No, I know that.
Yeah, I didn't mean it in the sense that it was bad because I knew you were fuming. It's not like that.
I wasn't fuming.
No, that's what I mean. You weren't fuming.
No.
But I knew that you wanted it, and I didn't want it so much, so I felt bad because I was like, oh, I would have been... Yeah. I would have given it to you.
I know,
Because, like, I'm... over the moon that I am getting to compete at Crafts with Dad, but it didn't mean so much to me.
Yeah. I mean, I can't wait to groom for you again. It would have been lush if we could have both been there together, obviously, as in both competing. But I can't wait to see Duck on the
She's got to go through a seesaw boot camp again for this, and then we'll see.
See, that's another best thing about having a partner in agility, the fact that we've basically given each other jobs now, and I'm going to retrain her wraps and remind her what a seesaw is. And you're going to do Raffy's dog walk for me, so...
Well, I don't know, I might pull out after training here today. She's a nightmare. No, I am chuffed the Duck's going to Crafts.
Yeah.
But, like, I would like, you know, with her, I would like to think we'll get there again. And, like, we'll certainly try. But it's cool for Hillary.
Yeah.
Hillary's Duck's breeder, and I know that she loves her a lot as well. So, nice that both of them, I'm talking about, have both been able to go to Crafts this year, so that'll be cool.
Yeah, you've already, like, got, obviously, already got those... both those dogs in Crafts next year, Cop in the International and Funky in the Novice Cup. Have you got any other goals for next year for the dogs now that we're at the end of the season? And what's your goals for next year for them?
Well, I'd like to qualify. In Britain, for people who don't know, like the highest competition class, I guess, would be like the championship class.
Yes.
So ideally this year, firstly, I would like to try our best to win a ticket again. Obviously, we came close last year with Cop. Duck never had a chance. So we'll be going for that. That'll be one of our goals for sure. But I would like to qualify Cop for the GB team again. Now, obviously, last year we qualified, but unfortunately couldn't do it because of kennel cough. And it was actually my own dog that sabotaged me.
Yeah,
Funky Duck got kennel cough, so Cop had kennel cough, and then we couldn't risk it. So
yeah,
I think the goals are definitely with Cop. I'd like to try to get back on Team GB. Both events, we'll try, there's no reason why not. And with Duck, we're gonna go and again give it a go. There's no expectations for her because she's a lot younger, but there's no harm in trying.
Definitely.
That's a goal, not an expectation, it's a goal.
Yeah, she's only got that one win left to get to grade 7 then, and then you can make those like champ classes and stuff. And
yeah, no, like I said, with Duck it's not an expectation to get on Team GB, even though it wasn't with Cop. But I know that he can. We'll go for it.
Cool. So obviously we've got collies. We've got a mini American Shepherd. Obviously I know she's my dog. We've got the Border Paps now, who are very likely to be small, which we didn't quite expect. But what breed of dog do you dream of having one day?
I know you know the answer to this.
Yeah.
I love Malinois. Always have. But yeah, I just think that I love collies as well. Obviously, it's not like I was forced to have a collie. I love our collies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like Malinois, and this was before the film.
Yeah.
But like with a young child who, he's good with dogs, but he does wind them up sometimes as well.
Yeah, definitely, and we definitely don't want a Maligator hanging off his arm, do we?
So yeah, we're gonna. I think for me anyway, the plan will be to wait till Osh grows up a bit, but my future is a Malinois.
Yeah.
I just really like them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you reckon you'd call your Malinois? Because obviously you've got quite a lot of quite random names, and I know we love our different names because we don't want other people having the same name. What do you reckon you'd call your Malinois?
Super bad.
Super bad.
Yeah, super bad probably, yeah. Something like that.
Cool. So what do you think people misunderstand about you the most?
I don't know. I think people think I'm more outgoing than I am.
I was thinking the same. I kind of feel like people don't understand that you're not shy, but you're not an extrovert or anything.
No, in a party, I'm not the person that's looking for attention.
I mean, you wouldn't want to go to a party, really, would
you? No, exactly, yeah. Like, I'm not that person who's, like, the loud one at a party.
No.
And I'm not really the type of person who... So I've definitely got better at understanding that... And it is through learning, I suppose, but like understanding that people are happy to talk to me.
Hmm.
Whereas in the past, I would never go up to someone and just start talking to them.
Yeah.
I'm so fortunate with my job, and I genuinely mean that. Like, I love the fact that I'm able to do what I'm able to do, and hopefully one of the reasons I am good about it is because that shows.
Yeah.
But because people who are in the academy, they see me every day. Whether it be through a talking video, whether it be through a fitness video, and they get to see who I am.
Yeah.
So who I am with my friends is like, I don't take myself seriously. And I don't coach that way either.
Yeah.
I'm not super strict. I sing along badly. Like, if I mess up, I don't edit it out. So they see me.
I think they
get that feeling that they do know me, because for all intents and purposes they do.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a character. Like, what you're hearing me speak to you like now is not for the podcast. This is how we speak, isn't it? Like, I take the piss out of myself, I take the piss out of you. That's who I am.
Yeah.
And like, I've definitely got better at people who I don't know. Now I understand that they feel like they know me. So if someone comes and speaks to me, I'll try my best to kind of be normal.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, that was quite awkward, because like, some people, for example, and like, this is a warning to all you people who do this. If your picture in your Facebook profile is of your dog, yeah. don't fucking expect me to know what you look like.
Yeah.
I have so many people come and talk to me, and it's like very clear and obvious that they know me. So they're like, it's obviously someone who's like on the Karma Fitness website or whatever. But I don't go snooping people's Facebook pages and looking in your photos. So if your photo is one of your dog, I don't know what you look like. Like, and so, yeah, I think that's what people misunderstand, is I'm not naturally outgoing.
No, not at all. But
like, not the centre of attention. Yeah, yeah. Like, I won't be, like, in a party, I'm not the one that's, well, I'm not the one that's like loud and like wanting to be centre of attention. And like, for all those people who like, now when we go abroad and all that kind of stuff, when people are getting steaming, I won't get steaming. But it's because when I do get drunk, I know I'm a nuisance. Yeah. I was like, not unfortunate, some of the best times of my life, because like, when I used to go drinking a lot, it was when I was part of like the rugby team. And like, I'm not nasty.
No.
I'm not a nasty drunk at all. I don't have any malice in what I do, but I'm not small.
No.
So like, when I'm like messing around with people, I just get a bit excited, I suppose. A bit like boisterous, and like, it's like, we used to like go downtown, and like, if we were getting drunk, it'd be nothing to like pick someone up and throw them in a water fountain. But like, it's other people who are doing that same thing, so it wasn't a problem then. I can't do that now.
No.
I can't go around doing that kind of stuff now. So it's like, when people are like getting really drunk, I won't get to a point where I am that drunk, because I know that, not nasty, but like, it'll be a bit much for some people, and I don't want to do that.
No, that's fair enough.
Yeah, so I try and like reserve myself a little bit more, I suppose.
I mean, I'm lucky that when you get drunk with me, that all you tend to want to do is dance, basically. So weddings, when you drink, you always get on the dance floor.
Like, when I'm saying all this, I'm not nasty.
No,
like, I've never been a nasty drunk. I'm just like, I'm not a small person. So when I think I'm being playful, sometimes it can just be a bit too much.
Yeah,
and I know that, which is why I try to not. not do it, kind of thing. But like, I see lots of people get drunk and they think they're being wild when they're doing stuff like, I don't know. Wild to me is not what wild to some people is. So I try and make sure that I don't show them what that wild is, I suppose.
Yeah, that's the thing. The boys that you grew up with from the lifeguards and from rugby and that, there's different levels of wild.
There's different levels of wild, yeah, for sure. And I'm well aware of that. So it's a case of, I just got to make sure that side is... Put to bed.
Because you are nearly 40 now.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. There's no need to be throwing people in fountains anymore.
No. So what annoys you the most? Anything in life?
Ooh. Easily annoyed, but very laid back, I would say. I don't lose my temper much.
No, I don't think we've ever actually had a real argument.
No, because...
Because you just don't...
I don't bite.
No.
Basically, I learned a long time ago that if you give someone the power to make you angry, that's your fault.
Yeah.
So if there's ever anything where I think this is going to be an argument, I just leave it.
Yeah.
And I just let you think you're right.
Which I usually am.
As my point goes,
obviously.
Letting you think that you're right. Yeah. But yeah, I am. There's a lot of. I think manners. I think like general manners annoys me when people haven't got them.
Yeah,
that's annoying.
It's like when people don't say thank you to you when you pulled over for them in the car.
Yeah,
and
that's annoying. But just like, if you go out of your way to help someone, and like, you know, I am very grateful when someone does it for me, and I will always say thankful. I'll always say thank you, sorry. So, like, yeah, general manners, I think, is one thing. What also annoys me? Some people are morons, mate.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are just stupid. Like, the things that they think is entertaining, I just don't find it entertaining and stuff. So, I don't know if that's annoyance.
Yeah.
I don't know if we call that annoyance, but... Yeah, I suppose.
Okay, fair enough.
I would say mostly manners. I find manners, lack of manners, annoying. Everything else, I'm pretty laid back with, really.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I know you've talked to your other people who you've interviewed about your crystal ball. I mean, I don't know if you ever used your crystal ball all those years ago when we, 10 years ago, before you got into agility, you probably never would have thought if it showed you that. This is where you'd be now in 10 years' time.
No, definitely not.
Laughed at it, I would have thought.
Yeah, 100%.
Would you look into your crystal ball now and want to see the future?
No, I don't think I would. No, again, the questions that I ask them because I ask myself first, and with that question as well, it's tempting, isn't it? But I don't think I would, no, because I would worry that if I want something, I go full out for it.
Yeah.
Like, I commit to doing it.
Yeah.
And, like, from a point of view of being stubborn, innit? Yeah. If I say to myself, I'm going to do something, I am going to do it. Or I am going to do everything I can to do it.
In every aspect.
Every aspect, yeah. And it goes back to, like, I was, like, really fortunate with my grandparents. They had a massive effect on my life. Mm. And one of my grandparents in particular, he was big on this one book. I talk about it a lot in Karma Fitness, so all of you guys who are in Karma Fitness, they're like, oh, here he goes again. It's called The Four Agreements, and there was a book that he got me to read when I think I was 16, and the one granddad that I'm talking about particularly, he was into Middle East philosophy, and like, he did karate, and he's quite spiritual, and like, he was just really into that kind of stuff, and like, self-help, and all that kind of stuff. And he told me to read that book, and it's by Don Miguel Ruiz. And it's an amazing book for anyone who wants to, I guess, improve. I guess it would be classed as a self-help book. Just sounds a bit cliche when you say it like that. But one of the things in there is be impeccable to your word. So if you say you're going to do something, fucking do it.
Mm.
And if you're not going to do it, don't say you're going to do it. Because otherwise, if you can't trust in yourself and you can't believe something that you say, what chance is anyone else going to have?
Yeah.
And I think one thing that is highly thought of between friends and between real friends is ones who you know won't let you down. And that's because they have never let you down before. That's how you trust someone, is to have that relationship with them who are in the past, you've always been able to trust them and they've never let you down. And what that is being impeccable to your word. If you say you're going to do something, do it.
Yeah.
Don't talk about doing it. Don't go halfway. You're either not doing it or you're all in. Yeah. The problem with posting on Facebook, I'm going into this now, and this is going to be another rant. The problem when people post about doing something on Facebook, or I'm going to do something on Facebook, is everyone is really supportive. And everyone will say, oh, well done, that's really good. Well, what's happening there is they're getting that dopamine rush of everyone telling them how good they are for doing something without actually having done it.
They haven't even started it, yeah.
So the problem is then you kind of lose what it is you're hoping to achieve if you are doing it for external influences, for external factors. So if, for example, really common one is like, you know, stopping smoking.
Mm.
Oh, I'm going to stop smoking on Monday. Everyone's like, oh, well done, that's really good. And like, they mean well. They want to encourage you, but what's actually happening is they're getting that dopamine hit of that encouragement, and they haven't done anything.
Yeah, they already think they're succeeding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a hidden trap, I think, of posting about doing something before you've done it.
Yeah.
If you're going to do something, just do it.
Yeah.
You don't need anyone else to know. You know, you should be, if you're doing it for yourself, no one else needs to know.
Yeah.
Do it yourself and tell people after. I think that's a good way to look at it.
So we're going to go into the quick fire round now. Oof. I'm going to look at my phone just
fingers,
so I make sure.
Fingers on the buzzers, is it?
Yeah, fingers on the buzzers. Go on, obviously, then. Quick questions. Right, what do you have for breakfast?
Black coffee. And cake
to it. I was going to say, I had a slice of chocolate cake.
I had my nephew's chocolate cake Happy birthday, Ro.
Yeah.
I had Rowan's chocolate cake for breakfast.
Yeah, perfect karma fitness breakfast. <that was. laughs>
Yeah.
Last thing you Googled?
The Four Agreements book.
Oh, yeah, true. Most used emoji?
Probably either the eye roll.
I was going to say you don't really use them, but yeah, I've seen that a lot.
Yeah, the eye roll one or the...
Or the sidey eyes.
What's that?
You know, like? The, like...
Yeah, the suspicious eyes.
Suspicious eyes, yeah.
Anyway, are you serious or what? Yeah, that one.
When did you last sing and what song?
Oh, it's probably that country song, wasn't it?
Definitely would have been a country one. You'd be in your cowboy
vibes. It was Luke Combs, Going, Going, Gone.
Yeah, it always is. Osh goes nuts in the car, doesn't he? Every time. We're going to put your favourite song on.
I think that's right in my range. Definitely not.
You did the key change, remember?
I pointed out
the key change.
I was harmonising in all sorts.
Yeah, you were.
For all those who were wondering, I'm a terrible singer.
But do you play any instruments?
I play lots of instruments, yeah. I can play guitar, bass, drums. Music was a big part of growing up for me. And like, as much as I used to do sports and all that kind of stuff, when I was growing up, when I weren't doing sports and I was in the house, I wanted something to do. So I used to play guitar.
Yeah. And that's probably another way that people think that you're more confident than you are, because obviously you used to be in a band, you used to be on stage so much.
But I used to put myself at the back.
Yeah.
I used to love playing in a band, but I didn't want the attention.
Yeah, true.
I let Adam have that.
It was one of my favourite things to do when we were first dating, coming to watch my handsome boyfriend play in a band.
I used to love being in a band. I used to love playing music. I used to love learning songs. I used to love arranging them. I used to love writing songs too. I used to hate everything else.
Yeah.
I used to hate setting up. I used to hate turning up early.
All that stuff was crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just get me in a band playing, I'm happy.
Yeah.
That's good.
Do you believe in ghosts?
No.
No. Any tattoos?
Got a few.
So many tattoos.
So many tattoos. And recently, the most recent ones, I suppose, is the leg sleeve that I'm doing with all the dogs.
I think that's my favourite one so far. I love your arm. I love the evolution arm as well.
Yeah.
But I love the dog when it's really, because it's like part of us, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, it's like a family one, really.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
The dogs, but I am turning it into a family one, because there's going to be lots of like Easter eggy type things that are things that remind me of people in my family.
Ah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's done an amazing job of really getting the dogs, just it is the dogs.
Yeah, it's different, because like when people look at it and they're like, I guess they don't get it. It's like, it's not meant to be portraits.
Yeah.
It's not meant to be an accurate representation of them.
Yeah.
It's meant to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
I asked for like psychedelic watercolors type stuff, an interpretation of them. Now you can tell which dog is which dog, but it's not so like the portrait of like the chimp that I've got on my arm, like that's really accurate.
Yeah,
the dogs aren't, they're like a little bit cartoony, but that's because I asked for
that. Like you said, we know which one is which. And they look brilliant.
Chris Harrison, shout out to Chris.
If
anyone's looking, Chris Harrison tattoos on Instagram, he's really good.
So what superpower would you have?
Oh, it's no doubt, no brainer. In charge of space and time.
Yeah, I think that's similar to what, like basically being able to control time. That's what I would do.
Yeah. If you can control time, you can control space, because they're totally reliant on each other.
Yeah, I'm surprised not many other people have said that one, to be honest.
Couple have. But time, that's what people say, I'd like to teleport. But if you can teleport, then you can control time as well.
Yes.
Because it comes in. You can't ever say, oh, I'll meet you at 2:00, because the next question is where.
Yeah.
And if someone, then you can't say to someone, oh, I'll meet you in Bridgend, because the next question is what time?
Yeah.
It's time and space. You have to control both.
So I know that obviously you use your Dr. Dolittle power all the time to ask our dogs how they are and tell them how much they love them. So they know that already. So what if I gave you an extra 10 seconds on top of the 10 seconds you've already used every day to tell them that, what would you say to each one of them?
I'd say the cops, stop worrying.
Yeah.
No need to panic. I think he's better now, though, so maybe I wouldn't use it to say that, because I do think now he understands, oh, it's just a game and it's fine if it goes wrong. I will still go home with him.
Yes.
He used to think, oh my God, I can't get it wrong. He's just a perfectionist cop. So I was like, buddy, if it goes wrong, don't stress, just keep going.
Yeah.
And every now and again, if you want to dip your toe in the contact on a dog walk, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Try and maybe go a little bit deeper on those A-frames so that I don't hyperventilate every time. That'd be cool. With Funky Duck, oh, where to start? If you want to be cuddled, stop wriggling. That'd be the first one. You need to stay still. Because at the moment, it's like trying to wrestle a cat. Not even a cat. That's a bad analogy. What's she like?
Wrestle an eel.
Wrestle an eel, yeah.
Honestly.
She's the dog that needs... She loves affection, but she will not stay still.
Yeah.
It's so uncomfortable trying to cuddle her.
You get punched in the face all the time as well. When she flips herself upside
down.
Yeah,
so you'll try and grab her to give her a cuddle, and then she headbutts you, and it's like, oh, Jesus. I'd say to her, if you want a cuddle, just lie still. That's fine.
Probably tell her she needs to turn as well.
Yeah, it'd be good. That'd be nice.
If stop on a seesaw.
Stop on the seesaw, that'd be a good one, yeah. Not all seesaws are dog walks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. And then for Hippie, I would say, please show me some emotion.
Yes!
Please let me know if things are good and let me know if they're bad. At the minute, she's definitely the serial killer of the family where she's just... Is she happy?
No
idea. Is she sad? It's all the same face, but she's cool. Really she like her. Cool. So, I mean, I'd just say to her, just give me a little bit. Give me a little bit back.
Cool. I think that's us done for today.
We're done. All right, cool. Yeah. Well, hopefully that answered some questions about me, I guess. There's plenty in there. I think that went on for a while. So if you stuck around till the end, fair play to you. But yeah, thanks, Aim.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, everyone. Speak to you soon.
Merry Christmas.
And that is it. That is the last episode of this season. I really hope you've enjoyed all of the podcasts that we've done, and I hope you will join us in the new year. Again, we're still looking for a sponsorship to come on board with us to help us make these podcasts possible. I hope you have a fantastic Christmas, and make sure you spend it with friends and family, and we will see you in the new year.